welcome to the Daggers and Lids podcast, where you are joining us down at Bristol, where the last ODI match has just been completed and it's seen England wrap up the series 3-0. And it has to be said, it's been a pretty convincing series win, hasn't it, for England? They've been pretty dominant throughout. And I think for New Zealand, an element of frustration that they just haven't been able to show exactly what they can do.
Yeah, it's been an interesting one, hasn't it? I think they dominated England, didn't they, in the first two one-day internationals. You were up at Durham, I came and joined you at Worcester. And look, they've batted first in each and every occasion. England have chased down very, very comfortably. They did far better at Bristol today. They showed a little bit more resilience, a little bit more graft with the bat, a little bit more purpose with the bat as well. But when you are trying to defend a 140, 150 type of total for this England side, which is absolutely loaded, and with an attack for the White Ferns, which I think is a little bit toothless here and there, I think they're missing a fifth bowler. It was relatively routine for England. They should be very, very comfortable and very happy, I think, and you probably agree, that Heather Knight wants these victories to be ruthless. And that is exactly what they've been, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the word that they used, ruthless and clinical against Pakistan, is something that I don't think they were. And I don't think they were overly happy with that, particularly given that when you see that matchup on a team sheet, you think actually England should be dominating Pakistan. And that's what they didn't quite do. So they'll be thrilled with that. I mean, today we'll just go through the scores. Obviously, England won the toss. They decided to have a bowl first. New Zealand posted 211 for 8. Remember, it was a rain-reduced game as well, so it was 42 overs aside. So that score actually felt pretty good in comparison to what they've been able to do. Everyone chipped in. Sophie Devine was the top scorer for New Zealand, 43 for her. And then career best for Lauren Bell, who picked up 5 for 37, and Kate Cross chipping in as well for 2 for 46. But let's talk about Lauren Bell, shall we? Because I think we've both been pretty critical, I think, which seems fair because of a number of reasons, really. We felt at times that making technical changes as a bowler, and you all know that more than anyone, that's a really tricky thing to do.
And I think we've been constructively critical, and I think it's important to say that, in that we don't believe that technical changes should be made within a series. I think that's just something that we believe. We're not saying it's right, we're not saying it's wrong, but that's something that I think we're both aligned with. That those sorts of things are best done in domestic cricket. They're best done in winters. Now, I realise that there is very little off-season for these England internationals. They're either going to franchise tournaments over in Australia or India. Yeah. And so to actually work on technical aspects of your game is not an easy thing to do. So when do you do it? Mm. Now, for me, an international match is an international match. Whether it's Pakistan, who are lower down the pecking order, or it's Australia, you ain't trying these things against Australia, so why do you do it against Pakistan? Yeah. And in that instance, they weren't ruthless in those series, I think, in the T20s or the one dayers. So that's where we stand on it.
Yes.
That said, one has to give a huge amount of props to Lauren Bell, who I don't think actually with the new ball bowled particularly well. I know that sounds really harsh, but she's got 5 for 30 on. But I think she was a little bit too short with the length. What she should be hugely encouraged about, I think, as a bowler, is the way that she came back in the middle overs. England needed a wicket. The partnership between Kerr and Devine was looking threatening. They needed a wicket. Kate Cross bowled a very tight over. And then Lauren Bell came back and Sophie Devine chopped one on, which was a little bit too close to cut. And from there on in, her changes of pace, you know, New Zealand, you know, they had to try and hit out at that particular point, but her changes of pace were really good. She was helped by some pretty steady catching. But overall, when you get in a five for an international cricket, good on you. Good on you. And I think that will give her a lot of confidence, especially Lids, when there's competition about.
Yeah, and I mean, let's not forget as well that they were without Sophie Eccleston today. So actually, all bowlers had to step up today, because Sophie Eccleston, she's one of the world's best bowlers, if not the world's best bowler, offers that control. She's a banker for 10 overs. So it was probably quite a good opportunity for England's bowling unit as a whole to be able to say, right, how are we going to dominate teams when we haven't got Sophie Eccleston at one end, just tying everyone down and picking up wickets?
Do you think that's a good thing for them to actually have tried and done? You know, the series has been won. They're 2-0 up in the series. A good opportunity to actually test that theory out, just in case the worst happens.
Well, and that would be the reason for it, I would imagine, is what happens if we don't have Sophie Eccleston for whatever reason. And I think that's not a bad place to be as a side when you feel comfortable with the likes of Charlie Dean and Sarah Glenn. And Alice Capsey as well, she can bowl a bit. And maybe that's more so in T20 cricket where she can come into her own there. But yeah, I mean, promising signs again for England. Obviously in the run chase, it was pretty clinical, wasn't it? I mean, at one point they were 75-4, which caused a little bit of alarm, I think, but the partnership between Nat Sivabrunt and Amy Jones just settled the ship slightly, which I suppose that is a bit of a vulnerability, isn't it, for England? They can have moments where they do have a bit of a wobble.
I wonder if this is a hypothetical, right? So just go with me on this one. But would England ever dare to sort of say to the squad, right, we're actually, not only are we resting Sophie Eccleston, we're going to rest Nat Sivabrunt the same side. Again, you've got to think in these kind of terms. And I'm not saying they will, but it would be interesting to see how that would transpire and how England go about it without, she's a safety net. She's the best safety net in the world. Yeah. You get yourself in a bit of bother and she is there. Mm. And she reads situations. It's almost like she goes into a completely different zone. She carries the side on her back. Mm. She seems to be so unflustered at the crease, have so much time, and no situation is too big for her to manage. Now, we've seen her do it, and this is the key thing, and I think every single innings that you play at this level, and every bowling, and that's bowling and batting, has to be judged against how you would do against Australia.
Yeah,
well, Nat Sivabrunt has got 3 centuries chasing in one day international against Australia.
Yeah.
That's her standard.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you are going to be judged against. And I think other cricketers should sort of feel the same about their games, how you're going to do against Australia. And that safety net and that Sivabrunt, goodness me, what other teams would give for that.
Yeah, and I mean, today was a great example of that, but also a good opportunity for someone like Alice Capsey how you close out a game. If England are going to use her as that sort of number 7 role finisher, perhaps, actually, being able to have seen the side home today, I think for someone like her, where she's still working out her ODI game, having that at the other end, that is, you know, you're learning from the best there, aren't you?
What about Sophia Dunkley? She came into the side again, her reintroduction into one day international cricket. What do you reckon?
I mean, we've spoken a lot about her technique, haven't we? And our concern about,
we spoke about it last podcast. Go back and listen.
Hopefully everyone already has.
Surely
the diehard fans.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, one of our concerns has been her technique. And I think there's no doubt for me that she has got that resilience and robustness. She is a tough sort of character. She was asked to go away and score runs at domestic level, which she did. But I think the question is always, can you then transfer that into international cricket, where they will put your technique under the microscope and they will find out any sort of weakness possible which they can expose, and that would still be my concern. I know she's made some changes. I think Katie Martin was highlighting them during our coverage for Sky, and she was saying how she's slightly more upright, which has maybe helped her head position, and it doesn't seem that back leg is collapsing as much.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's still potential for that grip to improve, as we
saw,
I think, in her dismissal. I think that was probably a really good example of where that bottom hand can at times be too dominant. I mean, I don't know what your...
Well, I look at everything from a bowler's perspective. And in that instance, I think we actually did on Sky a preview in the preview show. We did it on Maya Bouchier. Now, when Maya Bouchier is batting, her position in the stance and in the crease is so balanced in a variety of different ways. The head is parallel, her body is slightly flexed, and so that is able for her to go back and to then push forward. She can play leg side, she can play offside, because all of the leg allows the bat to come through in a straight plane. So as a bowler, I'm thinking, well, you know, every cricketer or every batter has a tell. You know, what avenue can I try and probe where I spot something in your technique and I can bowl to that weakness, if you like. With Sophia Dunkley, yes, she has made a few small changes. I still see the head slightly tilted, with the eye line not quite level, and what that does, it tilts that the head then leads over to the offside, and the weight is going to the offside rather than coming forward at the ball. That's what I'd be going at. Anything that then, as she drags and closes the face, I'd be tempted to bowl away swing bowlers, leg break bowlers, left arm spinners, anyone taking the ball away from the bat with it closed off. And I think that's an area that I think she might get undone. Today she was undone by the cut shot, one of her strongest strongest suits, but she's trying to score runs with that sort of limited range, if you like, through backward square on the offside, and she also hits through the leg side as well, from sort of from long off to deep backward square, and she's trying to score to a ball that actually isn't there for it. Mark Butcher made a really good point on commentary, is actually, if you are limited to those kind of shots, shuffle yourself back,
get
in a position to make room for yourself, so you then are not tucking yourself in a little bit. But look, this is just the start of her reintroduction into international cricket. Yeah. We cannot base her or judge her progress on just one innings, and I'm looking forward to seeing more from her.
And I mean, I guess we also have to remember, when she did come onto the international scene, she absolutely dominated, didn't she? And I suppose it is an element of first season syndrome, where people see you after a year or two, they work out your technique and things like that, and that can happen. But a player who I suppose is in that sort of amazing place at the moment is Maya Bhushia, isn't it? Obviously scoring her first international ODI 100 at Worcester, wasn't it?
It was at
Worcester. I mean, she's just gone from strength to strength, hasn't she?
I mean, absolutely incredible. I mean, she was helped massively by Nat Silverbrunt. I mean, I've never heard cheers as loud for Nat Silverbrunt patting back full tosses so that Maya Bhushia can. And usually I'd say, well, that's not great, you know, win the game. But in this instance, England had won the game. Yeah. It was, you know, I think it's smart from Silverbrunt, and probably the England team who, you know, sent Nat out if she needed any instruction, with the fact, get Maya Bhushia to 100, because that, I'm sure, well, you would have remembered your first 100, and what a difference that makes to you as a batter, and the weight off your shoulders, the freedom to then, you've got one, how many more can I go and get? Once you've done one, goodness me, what a hurdle that must be.
And especially when she's still so young as well. Yeah. She's unlocked that sort of recipe now. I always feel as a batter, it's whether you can win a real close game for your side chasing. I think that's something to tick off. You suddenly have a recipe for that, or tick off the milestones of 50s and 100s. And she'd already had a couple of 90s. And you know what we're like in the media. We suddenly build that into any narrative when she gets 80 or 90 and then gets out again, and we suddenly start
we're allowed to
score 100.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, she's been great to watch, and it'll be interesting to see her role in the T20 series as well. Obviously they've got some changes within that squad. Who will go out there? Tammy Beaumont will go out, won't she? Kate Cross will go out. Danny Gibson, I imagine, will come in, and Freya Kemp.
Freya Kemp, who's now available to bowl, we're told.
Which is great. And I mean, I don't know about you, Dad, because I know we shouldn't have faith, but I think in terms of young players coming through with a potential long future for England, Freya Kemp is right up there.
Well, here's another cricketer who has struggled with injury.
Yes.
And when you're playing around with stress fractures and that sort of thing, it is a very, very difficult thing to come back from, especially as a young cricketer. So you've got to nurse them there into a position that they're able to bowl at the international level very, very carefully indeed. What's happening here?
Well, I'm just trying to get Katie Martin, because wanted to get her thoughts.
Marty! Come and join us on the pod. You see, this is so freeform.
Kiwi view. Sorry, Daggers. I wasn't really looking at you, because I was trying to get Katie Marty.
I'm used to being ignored.
Can you come and join us for a moment? Yeah. We're live on the Daggers and Lids podcast.
People there you go. Do you like that little microphone?
Yeah, it might get a bit little light if you rub it against your face.
Not too close.
Sorry.
What are your thoughts on the on the New Zealand perspective from the one-day international series?
Disappointing. I think that, you know, I talked to you guys at the start of the series that I felt like they were going to be a little bit more competitive based upon the work that they've done. And I think it's time now that they reflect on the way that they go about things, what the personnel within the team looks like, is their experience that can come back into that side to help support that growth of the youngsters. Heard Sophie Devine say that she thinks they're getting better, and I agree. It's just that continued time frame of being able to go, is the World Cup next year too early to be able to reap any sort of rewards from that? Or is it saying that the next 12-14 months is going to be vital for that side? And I think T20 is a stronger format for these New Zealand teams, so it'll be interesting how they go about that in the next five games.
Who would those experienced players be, Marty? I think you mentioned Rosemary Mair before, haven't you? Who else would sort of be in that grouping of players who have maybe already played for New Zealand? Obviously, Bernardine Bezuidenhout has retired, which obviously rules her out. But, I mean, who else would there be that you might think about bringing in, or players who aren't here?
Well, Lee Casbrook and Leah Tohu, who comes back in for this T20 side, and they're vastly experienced. Lee's probably, some would say, New Zealand is overdue for the reward of coming back into the side, and I think she will add so
I'm
much.
I'm one of those.
Oh, I know.
I'm on the Casbrook. I'm on the Casbrook bus. I always have been.
Well, they talked about how challenging Pakistan's spin bowlers were. Just wait till Lee comes in. It might go a little backwards because she bowls with some really interesting pace.
She's got a moon ball, hasn't she? She's got a proper moon ball.
Yeah. She's actually one of the most intelligent bowlers going around. And I think as well she adds a little bit with the bat. She can bat and she bats for Wellington domestically as well. I think you look at Hayley Jensen, who's been in the New Zealand team, was at the World Cup as well. And then you've got Polly Ingles with the gloves, and it'll be whether they continue with Maddie Green as that backup option, or whether they bring someone in like a Polly, who's a contracted player now, who is very good against spin, to back in Izzy Gay. So there's a few players that are around the mix in New Zealand that I think can come into the side and can add to it. And Rosemary Mair, I thought, was fantastic and a standout in the series back home in New Zealand in March.
Thing is about New Zealand, obviously with the 20-over format, the sides get a little bit closer together. But they do have players within their ranks that actually can take a game away from you. Look at Divine or Bates or even, and I'd love to see it, Mealy Kerr, to come in. It's encouraging for New Zealand that she's in a bit of touch at the moment. 40, a grafting 40 at Worcester, half century here at Bristol today. So there's something good. But the opportunity for someone like a Divine to actually win a couple of games on her own.
I'm on the Divine opening bandwagon, and I think a number of people probably agree with me. And the theory behind her in the middle is the fact that there is that striking over 140, I think, through the middle. But when I think about Sophie Divine in the franchise leagues, especially Australia, she opens the batting, and she might be striking at 90, 95 for her first 20 deliveries. But if she's facing 60 deliveries, she's on 100, at least.
Yep.
So the longer she bats and the longer she has out there, I think she just gets better. The other thing is that Susie Bates's T20 form has probably declined by her standards, and so the partnership that she has had with Sophie Divine, Susie Bates at the top, second top run scorers I think in the history of the opening partnerships, I think behind Beth Mooney and Elisa Healy. So the way that Susie bats when she bats with Sophie, the intensity running between the wickets now, I think adds a lot. So it sounds like Georgia Plimmer will open in the T20 format for New Zealand. I don't think she's done it internationally yet, so it's a big challenge for her.
What about someone like Brooke Halliday? Obviously, with that left-hand, right-hand combination, do you think in the T20s they think of promoting her?
Probably that number six position, I'd say. She's not necessarily, her strongest format isn't the T20 format, but I think there's been enough about her to see how much power that she's had, and I guess the success she's had against England as well. So I sort of see that probably Green will be at 5, Brooke Halliday at 6, Izzy Gay is at 7, and then it will be around how they rotate behind that, and how many, do they go with 3 spin bowlers that they might do in Bangladesh, or do they go with that extra pace? Those are probably the decisions.
Well, look, it's been brilliant having you on. Thank you so much as well. Before we let you go and enjoy the nightlife of Bristol.
Are you going to hit the town?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I fully expect you to do so. You've got a hotel booked here for the night, haven't you?
I do, and I'm due a pint after my cricket net yesterday.
Get down Flares or whatever it is, Pop World. Get down Pop World in Bristol,
Bit of reflex.
Yeah, but is that what it is?
Well,
reflex.
Apparently so.
Yeah, you're a frequent
visitor.
This
makes me so nervous, but I'll give it a go.
Thanks so much, and we look forward to seeing you. Have you enjoyed it, obviously, in the box with us guys?
Yeah, I've loved it, but have you guys been okay to put up with me? I'm sorry about my...
You've been brilliant. No, we've loved the energy.
It's brilliant.
It's been good fun.
You would never say a bad word about anyone, Liz.
You see, I would, but it's the truth. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll take the small microphone, and we hope we're going. She's off to Bristol, off to Pop World in Bristol, where she ends up this evening. Goodness only knows. But overall, I think we can safely say it's been a pretty good one-day international series for England.
Yes, it absolutely has been. And I think they would have felt that they've ticked a lot of boxes. They've obviously given opportunity to different players. It was great to see Lauren Filer come in. We haven't even mentioned her yet. I think the way that she came in and bowled, I genuinely think now England have got a headache when it comes to who their seamers are
in this format
of the game.
A really good headache.
And obviously Mahika Gore has been here. Obviously Freya Kemp as well, who I hope we're going to see a lot of in the T20 series. But yeah, all in all, it's been a brilliant series. The crowds have been good as ever, always growing. And I think for the T20 series, they're going to be even bigger as well. I think Lords are trying to beat their record, aren't they, from the World Cup final
in
2017. So fingers crossed. But as always, thank you for your company. We hope you've enjoyed ours. And we will be, you'll be at Southampton, won't you?
No, I'm not there at Southampton.
I don't think I will be either. We won't be in Southampton.
But we'll let you know how it went.
We will. We will bring you updates as and when we can. And for now, remember, don't forget to subscribe and make sure you listen to us wherever you can on whatever platform you use your podcasts on.